So today I try to talk about tensor category from a physics point of view. And I have listened to the seminar and lecture on tensor category many times. And I feel that I myself is like a rock. You know, every time I listen to a lecture on tensor category, so like a rock submerged into the water. But the water never penetrates, only wet skin. So after half an hour after the seminar, I kind of forget what it's all about. But on the other hand, after you going this many times, and the rock getting softened a little bit. So here I try to explain my understanding on this subject. But totally from a physics point of view, I think on Friday you probably hear Lan Tian talk about this. So how to define things like that. But here I try to just purely from physics point of view. And so from physics point of view, the tensor category to me is very simple. Tensor category is the effective theory, but the gap effective theory. You see, that's it. So we know tensor category, don't need to talk about it. We know gap effective theory. But the trouble is that what is gap effective theory? We don't really know. It's just a name. So what is really gap effective theory? The answer is tensor category. So basically, the tensor category is an attempt to make this meaning precise. What really is effective theory? And actually, we have a similar situation. So we have a situation about the symmetry breaking phase. So you have this, symmetry breaking. So what is really a symmetry breaking phase? You say, okay, crystal is a symmetry breaking phase. Square lattice is one, Hornung cone is another. But again, this is just an example, not a comprehensive systematic understanding. So after we understand the group theory, we know what is really the symmetry breaking phase. Symmetry breaking phase basically is a pair. The symmetry group of Hamiltonian and the symmetry group of ground states. So actually, if you know this is a pair, then we know every symmetry breaking phase. So every symmetry breaking phase are labeled by a data. So this data is this pair of group. Okay. So we want to really understand what is a gap effect theory? What is a gap quantum phase? Basically, we are asking for the data. So what kind of data are necessary to fully characterize this notion, fully define this notion? And so therefore, this data we need actually looks like it's a tensor category theory. But on the other hand, there's many tensor category theories. So actually here, we are looking for one particular tensor category theory, which describes the situation at hand. So basically, there's a gapped quantum phase. It turns out that one had to distinguish the bosonic phase and the Fermat phase, because the tensor category theory only describe the bosonic phase. For Fermionic phase, there should be a similar thing, but we are not sure such mathematical framework have been invented yet. The Fermionic phase is different. It's different than mathematics, but it's not certainly not ordinary tensor category. So what is it? We don't know. So then, okay. No, that's not what I'm asking for. What I'm asking a particular tensor category which can systematically describe a Fermionic phase. I don't have that. Or maybe there are, I don't know. But on the hand, for example, we can say that a modular tensor category theory describe all two-dimensional gap phase. And so therefore, we know a particular tensor category describes a subclass of a phase, and we don't have a corresponding statement for Fermionic theory. Yes. Any dimension actually. No. So very good question. So which content category theory? So there's a, looks like it's an N category theory. So this is because we are doing things in any dimension. So there's a particular tensor category called N category might be the candidate. But I don't know M category very well, but it's maybe there are several definitions, it's still in development, but some flavor, some version of N category, maybe is what we are looking for. Okay. So, but here certainly I'm not in a position to describe what is N category theory. But on the other hand, we try to discuss some physical ingredient, basically what kind of physical phenomena the tensor category theory try to describe. So we need a tensor, like in a symmetry breaking phase, we just need a symmetry breaking pattern. So therefore the mathematics to describe a symmetry breaking pattern is a group theory. So happen to be group theory happen to be useful. And so here we are facing a similar question. So what kind of physical phenomena which we need to consider so that tensor category happen to be the language to describe this phenomena. So that's maybe the main thing here. I try to describe what is a physical phenomena. And so one way to try to start, you know, this is too general, but one way to try to get a start is to consider excitations, like a quasi-particle excitation, or like a P-brain excitation, because excitation can be string-like, like the vortex line in a superconductor is actually one-dimensional excitation. And it could have a more general, higher dimensional excitation. So in general, so that's basically N category. So we not only have a quasi-particle, but we also have this line-like excitation and a membrane-like excitation need to be taken into account. So what is the excitation? So here I will do things a little more formally. So what is excitation? Suppose we have a Hamiltonian, and which give you a ground state. Okay. And what is excitation? Excitation is falling. I want to design another Hamiltonian, sum over, let's call this H plus I. So basically, we just want to have some local modification of Hamiltonian. So that then this one gave a ground state. We call the Kc, but now with Kc I. So basically we have a space, like then we modify the Hamiltonian, like we create some kind of a potential well in this different place. And then presumably we can diagonalize a new Hamiltonian, the sum, we still have a gap. But this new Hamiltonian would have a trapped quasi-particle here. Certainly this Kc don't have to be a point. The Kc could be a line. Then you may have a trapped vortex line as a ground state. So basically this way you just, so using this, if this one also gap, so this one is a gap. But this also gapped. And we will design this gapped Hamiltonian, then just this ground state of a new Hamiltonian would have a trapped quasi-particle or quasi-line or whatever. Then you have that's the excitation. Okay. And so this is pretty ordinary. But however, in our case, we have no symmetry. So we want to consider a particular type of excitation. You know, most excitation like this, like a spin flip. And a spin flip is a kind of excitation you can destroy locally. So you can apply some local operator here and just remove this excitation. So the ground state here would just like the older one. If this happens, we say this is a local or trivial excitation. So this is a trivial excitation. But there are excitations that somehow it has some kind of energy, have a bump, you know, the energy localized, it has a bump of energies. But however, there's no local operator you can remove this excitation. You cannot never remove it. And one example for this is like a vortex in superfluid. You know, once you cannot destroy a single vortex. Only a vortex, antivortex annihilate together, but you cannot destroy one alone. So there are some excisions kind of like that. Although these two excisions are localized are far apart, but somehow they are connected. You cannot destroy the one alone. You have to destroy a pair of them or three of them together or things like that. So these things happen. And so we anticipate these kind of things happen. So therefore, so we have this notion of a topological excitation. Okay, the topological excitation basically is those excitation you cannot destroy by local operator. More formally, we can say the following. The local operator provides a so-called equivalence relation. Suppose excitation applied to local operator, you get another excitation. They're different. But we say these two excitations are equivalent. If two excitations differ by some kind of local spin flip or things like that, we say they are equivalent. And the equivalence class of this this action operator define the topological type, basically. So the topological type is the equivalence class. So it means a non-trivial class means that the excitation cannot be smeared or removed, annihilated by local operator. So this is one of the phenomena we want to study. So therefore, this topological phase, the gapped quantum phase, can have a topological excitations. Then the question is how many? You know, how many topological excitation will be one of a character of this gapped phase? And supposed to be something which should be described by tensor category theory. Okay. And so therefore, the topological extension itself also very important and interesting. So therefore, we want to understand this topological excitation. But certainly, a Euro tensor category theory only involving a particle-like excitation. But in N category, my understanding that you can have a string-like, a membrane-like excitation. They all come into play. So the things became much more complicated. So now we want to build a theory for these topological excitations. And then we try to say that the tensor category theory is basically a theory for those topological excitations. And so whatever ingredient tensor category need have will be kind of service to this topological excitation. Okay, any question here? Okay, so in addition to how many different types of a topological excitation, actually there's a lot of a feature in topological excitations. So one of the feature is a ground state degeneracy. Let's denote this as this. Okay. So I just mentioned that this Hamiltonian is a gapped. The Hamiltonian that defines the excitation, so we have a QC1 here, QC2 here, QC3 here. So those Hamiltonians are gapped. But a gapped does not mean you have a unique ground state. Gapped really means that you have a few nearly degenerate ground states, and then maybe you have continuum. So the gapped really means this. Okay, and then this feature is there and important in the sense that the ground state degeneracy became more and more accurate when those excitations are far apart, and it became exactly degenerate when are infinitely far apart. Okay, so that's the first information about these topological excitations. That is you have a ground state degeneracy associated with a type. This is QC1, QC2 is like a type. M is this manifold. Here, this manifold I draw is like a sphere, for example, S3 or S2 in two dimensions. But it can be torus or other more complicated topology. And again, the ground state degeneracy, this N, would depend on the topology of a space and also what kind of excitation you localize on the space. So you have this kind of a very interesting object. Okay, and so at this stage, I can already describe something I feel very puzzling. Yes.
So far, what you said also allows for discrete symmetry.
No, there's no symmetry here.
So can I think that the first piece of information is that the ground state degenerates are depending on the manifold?
Yes.
It would not be true for symmetry.
No, for symmetry breaking, they're always the same. Yeah. There's no topology dependence. And actually, what you maybe I'll answer this question in a moment. But it's really that when you have a symmetry breaking, things are different. One don't count this as a degeneracy. But the why is really I'm just trying to explain here. And so if I want to compare this to tensor category, this kind of a quasi particle we discussed would correspond to this so-called object in tensor category. So tensor category is have an object, have a morphism between object. Actually, I don't know what exactly is morphism. Actually, my story is that when I tried to learn tensor category theory is that I tried to read a book. It's a very famous book by, I forgot, Carrillo or something. And so the first line contain morphism. I don't know what is morphism, so I skip it. The second line also had morphism. And the third line, yet another morphism. I didn't go through the first page. So I couldn't ignore morphism. So, but I don't know what is morphism, so I just couldn't continue. Anyway, but here the corresponding that this quasi particle would correspond to so-called object in tensor category. You know that in tensor category, say we have something like two objects named fields. And you have this fields of a sigma cross a sigma became a one plus a psi. You know, basically, this is someone probably see this. It's like in the P superconductor, this sigma is this non-abelian onion with like a vortex. When you fuse two vortex, you either get nothing or you get a fermion. And I understand it's a product. Just putting two quasi-particles together, that's tensor product. But I don't understand what the sum really means. It's not superposition. It's not superposition of a ground state and a fermion. It's a something. So I myself don't understand. And so now I understand this, so I want to share this with you. What really sum really means. And to understand what sum really means, so let's go back to this degeneracy. And so there's a thing. You can see, when I say there's degeneracy, I didn't say this Hamiltonian is generic. Usually, one condensed matter, when we write down the Hamiltonian, really means a generic Hamiltonian. Degeneracy are generic. But strictly speaking, this can be any fine-tuned Hamiltonian and give you this degeneracy. So this degeneracy may not be generic, may be removable. So in a sense, we may modify the Hamiltonian near C. So we modify this HC1 near this region and split degeneracy. This is possible. So suppose this is what happens. Suppose we have some degeneracy. Then after including some additional perturbation near one point, then degeneracy gets splitted. Okay. So what that means? That means this quasi particle type C1. It's not simple, it's composite. So this is a notion of a simple object and a composite object in so-called tensor category. So this is a composite. Composite really means it's artificial, it's a fine tone. And usually we don't call this quasi-particle. Only those which have a stable, which are stable against arbitrary perturbation, these are called quasi-particle. So in condensed matter, when they call simple object quasi-particle, composite, we don't call them quasi-particle. But however, when you define quasi-particle this way, these things may happen. This can happen. So in this case, I say it's became composite. So it became if these three are lower, we may have a CA. So that's represent this one. But you may think we may add the perturbation differently. Maybe these two are lower. If these two are lower, then the real quasi-particle will be maybe C1B. Okay. So this is what sum really means. So we write this as a Kc1a direct sum Kc1b. So this is not, this sum is not sum of a vector. It's a sum of vector space. It's a direct sum of vector space. It means that the degenerate space is unstable. It can split into two more fundamental one. And then there are some so-called simple object of more fundamental quasi-particle that this energy is stable against arbitrary perturbation locally. Then if this energy is stable against arbitrary local perturbation, then we say, okay, this particular quasi-particle are simple, not composite. They are simple. Yes?
Sum them up and you get a triple and then a single polynomial.
Yeah.
This could be a different energy depending on which perturbation, right?
That's right. Yeah. It's similar to that. Yes?
So the splitting is coming, I guess, because the one inside has different local targets. There's some local operator that has different.
Yeah. These two have some local distinctions.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if they are locally, what I try to say, these two could be the same. You know, this A could equal to B, so there could be also 3-4 degenerate state.
Yeah,
but still, so these two could be the same fundamental type, a simple type. But you can still put them together like this. So in this case, you'll get this Kc1 equal to 2 Kc1A. You can write this way. This kind of thing happens. These two can be there. So it means that it's splitting into two simple objects, but these two simple objects happen to be the same type of simple object.
Right, but in that case, it may not be possible, I would think, to actually separate them in energy using a local operator.
If they are same type of simple object, I see. You say when that happens, it's impossible to separate the energy. I don't know. My current understanding is yes, you can separate them, but it would be nice to have an example. So if you have some example for TQFT which do have this the fusion do contain this factor 2, then you can really see whether they can separate. I didn't really check it, but I feel it is probably separatable. Yeah, that's my understanding. Yeah. Yeah?
So maybe it's there also when you have a perturbation and then you see how the relationship relates to the
quasi particle.
How does the splitting relate to the quasi
particle? So basically, so the thing that what I try to do here is that I already define the quasi particle as though those thing can localize by this local Hamiltonian. That's my definition. I create some kind of local perturbation which traps something. Whatever it traps, we say that's kind of quasi particle. And here, I just want to explain that there's so-called the composite one and the simple one. And the simple one is that the degeneracy of those traps are stable against any perturbation. Then we say the quasi-particle trapped by those local perturbation is a simple one. But sometimes if your local Hamiltonian chosen very specially, you may have an accidental degeneracy. In that case, you trap two kinds of quasi-particle. But we say when you have two kinds of quasi-particle, not superposition, just as a sum of a vector space, it's a little strange. Then we say these two are, we call intensive category language is called a composite object, a composite quasi-particle. Usually physicists don't think about it. Physicists never talk about this, always consider this generic case, never talk about this accidental case. But however, in tensor category theory, this composite one the object in the tensor category theory actually is a composite one, can be composite. So they put these two together, they talk them together. And then, but then there's a notion of a simple one, which is a more elementary. The physical definition of a simple one is that their ground state energies are stable against this. And this notion is related to symmetry breaking in some sense. You know, if there's some degeneracy coming from symmetry breaking, then the degeneracy coming from symmetry breaking are always unstable in this language, can be always removed by local perturbation. So this is why the symmetry breaking is ruled out here. Like in symmetry breaking, usually what happens is that even we don't have any quasi particle, then on the manifold you can have a degenerate ground state. But these degenerate grounds are accidental. So can be removed. So this is quite interesting. Without quasi particle can be viewed as a trivial type. So there is a notion of tensor category with a unique trivial type or with a several trivial type. I don't know. Now I'm really in a territory I myself don't understand, but I do heard about there's a strange tensor category with a several trivial type. I think called the multi-fusion category somehow. And so sometimes I'm dreaming maybe this multi-fusion category happened to leave a room for symmetry breaking states. That's a so that means even the ground state can have degeneracy, but which is splitable degeneracy. Yeah. And this is things I don't quite know. Yes? Yes, in physics, we only consider simple object. But however, when people, that's one headache I have when reading this tensor category definition. When they say object, I think really mean composite one. And they include composite one. And then formulate everything in that way. Yes? Yeah. I see. Is this related to symmetry breaking or something?
No.
Oh, I see. You say this may be accidental degeneracy even. They may not relate to symmetry. This. I see. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. But you know, I again, I'm trying to learn tensor category myself, and but I try to slowly try to have a physical picture of some basic concept into tensor category, so maybe I can really think about it when I read some definitions. Yes. Okay, so now let's give you an example of the Z2 theory, and so in the Z2 gate theory, so consider this is Z2 gate theory. And in the Z2 gate theory, we have a trivial X particle, and E, and we have a M, we have epsilon. So we have a four type quasi particle, epsilon equal to the fusion E and M. And so those are trivial, those are types, but those are simple types. Okay, those are simple types. So number of simple type, I think is something, those are simple types. And so those simple type excitation is that so in this case, what happens is that this degeneracy n always equal to 1 or 0. Basically, is that if you put an even number of E on the sphere, it's okay. So then this, but there's no degeneracy. Degeneracy actually is 1. So this n equal to 1. And but if you try to put a 3e, if you try to trap 3e, and then there will be another e moving around. You can squeeze out somewhere. Even no trap, that has to be there. So you don't have degeneracy anymore. So even though you make three traps, but actually you create four lumps of energy, and this is not allowed. Basically, in the definition, I should remove this possibility. I say three trap only create three lumps of energy. There's no fourth lump otherwhere, in other place, and so in this case, it's not allowed. So therefore, so this n, if you have a 3e, will be zero dimension. And this is a kind of a situation. I think the more interesting situation is that is a case with this p plus ip superconductor. In p plus ip superconductor, you have this sigma, which is this vortex. Okay, and when you have two sigma very far apart, we know that it have a Marana zero mode. So there is a zero energy level in a single particle picture, which may be occupied or unoccupied. So therefore, when you have two sigma on a sphere, the n will be equal to two. So this is called the fusion space. This fusion space for dimension two, fusion space. Okay, and so this is usually for the abelian quantum abelian statistic, the fusion space dimension always a one or zero, but when you have a fusion space with dimension like a two, that's a really almost sign or maybe almost definition of non-abelian statistics. So non-abelian statistics really means the situation that you have two traps, but somehow you always have a degeneracy two, and degeneracy are robust. No matter what kind of local perturbation you can put here, you can remove it. This is a little bit strange. You say, I just need to put something measure Feynman number here. But measuring Feynman number on a single side probably cannot remove degeneracy. This zero mode somehow is not here, but somewhere in between, somewhere. Okay. But when you put these two things closer, then the degeneracy start to get split. And this is really the fusion process I described here. When far apart, you have twofold degeneracy. When you put it together, then actually some local operator which can cover all of them can actually split the degeneracy. And they either split in a way with this occupied level, either have a higher energy, lower energy. So that's exactly this relation. You know, they split, this one, either identity is no, this trivial ground state, or you have one actual fermion. So this is the picture to describe the fusion. It's really this the splitting of degeneracy is describe this this kind of fusion algebra. The degeneracy are really degeneracy of this particular Hamiltonian. You can imagine you have a Hamiltonian which like to trap two vortex. Okay. When the vortex is very far apart, you get very accurate degeneracy. When you try to bring them together, then depending on detail, sometimes this no fermion state have a lower energy, sometimes one fermion state have a lower energy, but you have two choice. The original two-fold degeneracy split into two degeneracy, but now the two states have definite fermion numbers, and which you call either one or psi. What n? No, n is dimension. Okay. So maybe you should call D category. Okay. It's really dimension. But certainly I don't know, it's a space dimension or space-time dimension. So my understanding of n category is not good enough to see whether it's n is a space or space. I don't know, I forgot. If I check, I probably can find out, yes.
Most of what you have described, you have used the known physics and known quantum physics.
Yeah.
And it's not clear how category theory organizes it.
No, it's already, so it's, it, 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 yes, So what I described really just a simple known physics or quantum physics. But the category theory is just a way to organize this, to describe this in a very systematic, general way. So from here, we already get this fusion algebra. So Ci cross Cj equal to this sum over k, n I j k. So this n is different than Cc k. So it's really describing something like that. So basically, this is a new phenomenon to us. Usually we say we put two quasi-particles together, we get another quasi-particle. So what? But we have now abelian statistics, the things are more complicated. When you put two simple quasi-particles together, you may get a composite one. The two simple quasi-particles together, the degeneracy, Gwang degeneracy may not be stable, may be unstable. So you get this so-called composite one. So that's a necessity to introduce this concept of composite quasi-particle. And usually in kinesthetic, we don't say that. We don't think about that. But because usually the one we're familiar with, like anion, abelian anion, things like that, for two quasi-particles together, you get another simple quasi-particle. But for non-abelian statistics, that's not the case. The two simple quasi-particles put together, you may get a non-simple one. So this is really related to this fusion algebra we describe this. And if a fusion algebra, if this sum, direct sum only contains one term, that's kind of abelian fusion algebra. So then there's a unique fusion. So that's really the more familiar situation. Yeah. So this is a wonderful thing which the tensor category may help us. So this situation do appear in physics. The two simple quasi-particles put together became a non-simple one. And the tensor category theory allow this kind of a generalization.
More.
Not more. This is hopefully not more. So this is a my understanding is pretty limited, so at least I feel I understand the fusion, and that's it. And but certainly if you say more, there will be more, and the more will be like for the higher dimension, you should have this kind of thing for string-like excitation or membrane-like excitation, and you may have, I don't know, do you have to consider the fusion of a point excitation and the string-like excitation? Or maybe one don't need to see. I don't know. So things like that is a lot of headache. Yes.
So you need to think local operators can have different.
That's right. So for the simple one, no local operator can separate the ground state. So somehow this ground state is a shared property of all the excitation. The local operator can maybe just shift this excitation around a little bit. They don't do anything. And only when you bring two excitations together and you have some operation, kind of like moving something around it, like adding a loop operator circulating two excitations, this kind of operator can distinguish this degeneracy. Yeah, so that's give you this fusion. So this is basically I try to explain the physical picture for the simple object and for the fusion of simple object, so which have quite a straightforward interpretation. Yes?
I'm still trying to understand the special case when, for example, this Ksi 1 equals two copies of Ksi 1a, suppose.
Yeah.
It looks like to me this system that contains Ksi 1 and also Ksi 1a has a larger symmetry, and this local projection breaks the symmetry, doesn't respect that symmetry.
Yeah.
It looks like two copies of the representation of a smaller group or whatever is embedded in this representation of the larger group.
But yeah.
That is this psi one represents.
Yeah. So that's a good point. If this Hamiltonian have a symmetry, if your perturbation have a symmetry, you may create this composite object in a natural way. But however, since you're talking about topological phase here, So we are allowed to add a local operator which break any symmetry. So therefore, this can be split. But this really points to something quite interesting. It means that if I want to combine symmetry with this, and maybe in that case, some composite object may behave like an elementary one. Because if you say, I only allow perturbation which have a symmetry, I only allow to add a perturbation which respects symmetry, then you may have a different definition of a so-called simple or non-simple object. And I don't know, this is a thought. I don't know whether one can let something using this thought. Yes? What? The local operator in this language, I don't know, the local operator cannot change the topological type.
Well, if you have the middle of local variable, it is 0 on side 1A and non 0 on side 1B. So the local operator comes from side 1.
Oh, I see. So, yeah, when you have a composite one, then I don't know what you say, because it split, it can split. And so but basically what I have to say, the local operator can realize this is splitting explicitly. Yes, but the project out really means that you raise its energy, yes. Yeah, that's okay. And
I think these are the morphisms of the category. The local operator.
Okay, what is a morphism? So let me try to explain. But this is a little uncertain. But I don't feel like that. Maybe let me put it this way. So local operator I have here. Let me see. Because of the operator we consider here, probably I want to say the unitary operator. When you want to deform something, always use local unitary operator to deform it. So maybe that's more accurate to say that given the extension here, if I perform local unitary operator, that extension always became same type. But this may be only true for the simple one. Yeah, for the composite ones do not have such stability. Oh, I see. That's your.
On the other hand, if there's some simple object, some of simple object projections of the
reason. Okay, I didn't think that way. But yes, that's a really nice thought. Yes.
You know, the morphisms are like a sum of identity. They take a piece of xi1 and send it to the corresponding piece of xi2.
Okay.
So I think that it can be thought of as local variable and leave on this component.
Okay. Yeah, I see. So you say that the simple object are stable is kind of related to this, the morphism on the simple object only just one dimension, just is to itself. There's no other choice. Yeah. And the composite one may have several different space. Yeah. Okay. Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, that's true. Okay. Yeah, that I think that's the same thing. Since you mentioned the morphism, so let me just describe the morphism. I think another setup, but I think similar to what you described. But so what is the morphism? You know, there's a my mathematician friends kind of really want to use a simple language. You say the object is a point morphism is arrow between points. Which is actually literally true, but it doesn't help me because in physics always want to attach any mathematical notion with some kind of physical significance. And probably mathematician, I don't know, want to think differently. They want to remove all the physical significance of any mathematical notation and think the abstractly the pure logical content of something. So the arrow and the point don't help me. So what I try to do is here is that so morphism is an arrow between object. It's something between object, but object is a can be composite. You know, can be this one, can be simple one, some object. So it helps me. It helped me to think about the rather than think about the composite object. Let's think with it's helping to think about simple object, because I almost don't think composite are illegal, but which is not certainly not right. But simple one is too simple, and so to make things a little less simple, so let's consider the tensor product of several simple objects. You know, so we want to consider anyway. This is an object. And one can see the morphism of this type of object. That's a seems to me this is a if they are all simple, the tensor product is a physical interpretation of very simple. Just put a few quasi particle somewhere, so that's a simple situation. And they should have a morphism, so that's arrow to some other collection of object. And etc. You know, so what this really means. So one way to think about this is you have a sphere, you have a three object, which is a Kc1, Kc2, Kc3 here. Then you try to put another three object on that part of the sphere. Kc1 prime, Kc2 prime, Kc3 prime. But here you put their antiparticle. So that's a little bit of complication. You put the antiparticle on the sphere. And that's it. Then you say there's a degeneracy. So in general, you put the things on the sphere, and there is a degeneracy, it's a fusion space. This is a degenerate ground space. And so this degenerate subspace is a vector space, V, labeled by this Kc1, Kc2, Kc3. To this Kc1 prime, Kc2 prime, Kc3 prime. So this vector space of this degenerate ground state is this arrow. So this arrow means so morphism is something, but this something in this context is a vector space. It's a vector space you construct this way, but certainly David's example also works in a sense. If you only have a two object, suppose you have a Kc1 here, the simple object, then here you have to put the only Kc1 bar here, and the vector space is always a one dimensional. So in this situation, this ground degenerate is a one. But however, if this Kc1 is a composite, it contains what I will describe here, Kc1a and Kcba, then you can put the Kc1a here. Or Kcba here, you know, then this the vector space will be if you put Kc1a here, the vector space will be one dimensional. If you Kcba here, that's also one dimensional. But you can see there's you can put different things here to get non-trivial morphism. Is that right understanding? Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yes. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I see. Oh, I see. You try to understand what the composition really means. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I see. Okay, you join two lines together. Basically, you think.
Yes. If the line
Okay. Oh, I see.
So these things can be composed.
Well, okay, but I mean, a lot of times morphism, you think of as processes or actions, then there's a very natural way of composing.
Yes, so it's an easy.
Yeah, indeed, this is a very good point. I need to digest what you said. But if I view morphisms this way, I do have some problem to see the composition. It's not natural. In this picture, you define the morphism as a vector, as a degenerate vector space of these things. But how to understand the composition? Basically, you know, the tensor kind of have these axioms that the two morphisms can compose into another morphism. So basically, this means this vector space has some composition laws. That is I don't quite understand. So I need to understand more. And but this
Why do you feel that going from the C to the C and that vice versa? What gives the direction to the arrow?
So maybe here is both directions are fine. But I may assume something, and because if I attach, basically in here I define the morphism as the same thing as the between the two as the same thing as the combination. I take a conjugate of this, combine all together the morphism to one. You know, using that to define. I feel this is easier because maybe it's more general to consider. The morphism is really like when you merge two quasi particles, you can get a third quasi particle. How many different ways to fuse it? And I have a little bit of trouble to really to see this in the experimental way, a numerical experimental way. However, I can really do this by putting some perturbation, you know, and put diagonal Hamiltonian on the sphere, just examine the ground state degeneracy. So therefore, this way I can really see this vector space, which corresponds to morphism. Yeah, but from this picture, I need to understand the composition better. Yeah.
You need another morphism to go from the C bars to something else.
Yeah, that's right. That should require gluing. Basically, if you want to, from here to here, from here to another one, then you can imagine there's another thing which is with all this, and then kind of glue them together, and then something happens, something magic happens, and everything works. And so basically, this is there is something I still don't quite understand, but I try to say this is this tensor kind of you try to capture, and so you have this fusion. And you may ask the following thing, you know, you have this integer matrix describe a fusion. So whether arbitrary integer matrix is okay here, or there are some requirement, only a certain particular integer matrix describe legal fusion. And this integer matrix are really, from this integer matrix, you actually can construct this dimension of all this vector space. And this vector space can be glued together. You know, one way to look at this is the following. You know, this quasi party like a defect, you can make this quasi party into holes. Okay, so the whole thing really became, became something like this. Now here you also have a three holes. And so you have some quasi particle here, some quasi particle here, and the dimension here of this is just some vector space describe this, and then you have a way to you need to glue them together, and then when you glue them together, you know. So then you have you have this composition, and. So those vector space would compose in some nice ways, so which is still satisfy this fusion algebra. Your fusion algebra determine the vectors, all kind of vector space dimension like this, And so so basically the tensor category is a theory. Try to put all this together. And so I don't know what time it is now.
Say again,
this formula just the same thing as this. You have a two quantum particles put together. That's our usual way. We put two quantum together. But then we find if you view these two quantum particles as one quantum particle, it's not a simple one. Means that if you really put these two quantum particles together closely, the ground state is no longer stable. Ground state, the energy is no longer stable. You can split them. But when you split them, you can form this direct sum of a splitting space. You can see which kind of simple object they can split into. Because after splitting, then this energy became stable by definition. You know, you can no longer split them. And then this stable degeneracy always represents a simple object. So that's how this composite one can become several direct sum simple one. So this is becoming this fusion.
I just wondered, what's that symbol in front of the L?
Oh, sum, direct sum. This is sum over K. So this is
a sum, yeah.
The direct sum. Okay.
Okay.
So maybe let me just since already an hour. So we'll try to stop here. And this is the first stage of tensor category theory, I understand. maybe then just give you some more examples. And this Z2 gauge theory in 2+1 dimension is one example. But here I want to see that let's consider the Z2 gauge theory in 3+1 dimension. Maybe let me just modify this. For Z2 gauge theory in 3+1 dimension, and then its excitation will be trivial one. You have a charge and you have a string. Basically, that's a string, it's just this vortex line. It's a Z2 flux line. In 3 dimension, this vortex became a string. Okay. So actually, this is already something beyond the usual modular tensor category because it has strings. But also pretty simple, we feel we understand it. But on the other hand, in the general categorical way to understand it, I think that's probably involving this higher category. But I want to use in this example to consider another thing is that the 3+1D have a 2+1D surface. Okay, have this 2+1D surface, 2-dimensional surface. So what is on the 2+1D surface? So in some sense, the Z2 gauge theory in 3+1D is like a superconductor. You know, superconductor have this Bogdanov quasi particle is like this E, and have this vortex line, this like S. Okay, but on the surface, what happened on the surface? On the surface, it became a 2+1D theory. It still have a gap. Then this 2+1D theory is pretty interesting. It have excitation 1 and the E. Have only these two. Because this flux line, when they come to surface, they can go further, go into the vacuum and nothing. So therefore, the flux line can disappear on the surface. That means the surface have a flux line condensation. Means when you throw a flux line to get the condensation, it's merged, it's not big, nothing. So this surface is defined by this flux line condensation. If outside is a vacuum, it's a flux line condensation. Okay. So when you have flux line condensation on the surface, you no longer have this flux line. So you have two type of quasi particle, or one type non-trivial one, the trivial one and the non-trivial one, E. Okay, and this one is the boson. This one also boson, the trivial one. So both are boson. Okay. So this is a, you say, okay, the surface of a 3D superconductor is a tensor category. It's a very simple one with identity and a boson. And so presumably there is something, you can use some tensor category to describe it. But this one happened to be a, you can imagine, a thick one. Means there are tensor category to describe it, but this tensor category somehow have some bad properties. This bad property says that this kind of thing cannot live by itself. So you cannot have a purely two-dimensional theory which realize this kind of quasi-particle, that you have a bosonic quasi-particle which is trivial, you have another bosonic quasi-particle which is totally stable. You cannot remove it, although this is a boson. There's no reason why this one should be stable, but somehow it's stable, and this cannot happen. Okay. So again, this maybe trying to answer, you know, why we study tensor categories, because when you're using the fusion and the braiding, sorry, I didn't talk about braiding. When you're using fusion and the braiding, try to describe this quantum, because when you consider statistics, that's also braiding. We're using fusion braiding to describe them, so, we hope we can have some formulas that say that this kind of fusion braiding is okay, we can realize that. But this kind of fusion braiding is not okay. It can only be realized as a surface of a 3D superconductor. And you can be more general. So let's change it to fermion. Suppose we have a two-parallel theory with only two types of quasi-particle, trivial one and a non-trivial one, but non-trivial one is the fermion. Can we realize that? You say, of course we can realize that. It's just a simple theory of spinless fermion. But that's not what I'm asking. I'm asking, can you realize as a bosonic theory? Because here, our starting point is always bosonic theory. So whether there is a quantum spin model, you can have some spin liquid states such that you only have a single non-trivial topological system, which is a fermion. And this is, again, impossible. It's also anomalous. But how about the semion? If this single quasi-particle have a semion statistics, is that possible? Then in that case, it's okay, it's possible. That is a new to 1/2 of Laughlin quantum Hall states. Realize this is semion statistics. So again, this is a very, very simple example, but to give you some flavor, that's there's many kind of tensor categories. Basically, at the end, you know, so far I try to describe a fusion more carefully in the more physical way. But I only describe a fusion of a point-like particle. I did not describe the braiding. But in general, also braiding and the mutual statistics also important. So basically, here we try to say that the tensor category, actually, my understanding is just a collection of data which describe a fusion and the braiding. It's a physically. But how much data to describe a fusion and braiding totally is a challenge. But physically, naively, it's just fusion and braiding. And now here we have this example. We have two quasi-particles whose fusion is known. It's just E cross E became one. So that's a very simple Z2 fusion. But however, this E can have a three choice statistics, boson, fermion, or semion. It turns out that the boson fermion choice, this one is anomalous, cannot be realized as a 2D system, bosonic system. But if this one is a semion, it can be realized. So somehow this tensor category of a fusion and a braiding should be able to tell us, you know, why these three choices are so different. Yes? When I say realizable, really means stably realizable. Yeah, so there is a stable phase, and realize this as a stable quasi-particle and a stable ground state and all that. Exactly. So this is not count as a realization. So basically you say, that's another notion. So all the state here, we talk about so-called stable topological states. And when I say realizable, whether it can realizable as a stable topological state or not. Yeah. And so therefore there's a, so Yeah, just through this very simple example, you already see that there's a lot of feature in it, and so that's what that's a thing we try to understand. Yeah, and the braiding and the yes, and in this particular case, I think it's a there's something we didn't talk about. This modular transformation, this SNT matrix, and I think in this case the S matrix probably is not invertible. That's my guess. Yeah, S matrix is not invertible. So that's if S matrix is invertible, we call that a modular. So this kind of anomaly we describe here is a kind of non-modular. So there's a modular tensor category theory. If you remove modular, just tensor category theory, then you can describe the boson-fermion case. But for the Semyon case, I think is modular. So modular means anomaly free. In 2+1 dimension, I think that's understanding. Non-modular means anomalous. That's more general. You can describe a surface of other states. But when you have a modular one, then it's anomaly free. But certainly, when you're using the tensor category language, you can really, using this fusion braiding data, you can compute this SNT matrix. If you know the fusion and the braiding, you can compute SNT matrix and to see whether it's modular or not modular. And then you can tell whether certain proposal of statistics is realizable or not realizable. So basically that is a usefulness on the maybe power of a tensor category. It allow you to think about the things like that. No, what I so supergranate is just one motivation to motivate this one boson case. Actually, the fermion case have a realization as a boundary. You know, there is a particular so-called twisted Z2 gauge theory in 3+1 dimension, where the Z2 charge is a fermion. So therefore, the fermion case can also be realized. But however, for the semion case, you don't need a bulk. You can realize semion case directly as a pure 2D system. But the first fermion and the boson case, you need the bulk. And yeah, and since we talk about this, then there's a conjecture or proposal. You know, in order for the topological phase to be anomaly free, every quasi particle is detectable by at least one other quasi particle via the mutual statistics. Basically, means if you have one quasi particle, then there's another quasi particle. When you move this quasi far away from this one, you already can detect is there something in the middle, although you only do that far away. And when you have a boson fermion case, boson fermion have a trivial mutual statistics. When you have boson, moving boson around the boson give you nothing. If fermion, same thing, moving fermion around the fermion give you nothing. But if you have a semion have non-trivial mutual respect self. If you have a semion moving another semion all the way around, it gives you minus one. So therefore, the semion case satisfies this property that every quasi particle are detectable by at least one other quasi particle. And for the particle case in lower dimension, this may be a sufficient and necessary condition for the theory to be so-called anomaly free. And in higher dimension, we don't know. We wish there are some similar thing like that. Yes? Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah. 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 So again, this anomaly free mean what anomaly is a gravitational anomaly? So those because there is no symmetry, no gauge theory. So all anomaly here are the gravitational anomaly. So basically this line of thinking may lead to a general formulation of a gravitational anomaly. That's on the boundary of the system. Okay, so other questions? And maybe I'll stop. So the the way I describe here, you can say when I try to say category here, that really means that we assume all these states are realizable, so anomaly free. So here it means anomaly free. Yeah, but however, we'll extract this fusion algebra and the braiding property as standing alone. You may collect some data, but this collection of data may be illegal, may be anomalous. So it means not realizable. But they are realizable as a surface of something. What I try to say is that on the surface of some kind of topological states, you may also create quasi-particle things like move them around doing the same thing. You can see in this case, I don't assume the inside sphere is empty. It can be solid. If assume inside sphere is solid, then you can do things on the surface. You can form the same thing. But in this case, you formulate a little more general category theory. That I don't know. This morphism between dimension, I'm still confused. Okay. I see.
So each string is an object in a higher category.
Oh, I see.
And then you can use things and kind of things like that to give operations on this category. Maybe that's a
good thing. I see. Yeah, this is something we try to struggle to understand, how to bootstrap this to go to higher dimension. Because if you really want to understand, I don't know, the difficulty we have really to have a data describe all this braiding and fusion seems is too complicated. Yeah, it's not practical. And there should be way to try to bootstrap it. So basically, if you define everything in one dimension, and just add a little bit of structure, go to one higher dimension. So maybe that's become something manageable. And so I don't know, but this is but directly in three dimension or 2+ dimension, you only have quasi particles. So their braiding, their fusion is okay. It's just describe their braiding and fusion, you get everything. So that's an ordinary tensor category theory. But in higher dimension, so maybe some kind of some more categorical thinking helpful to go one dimension to another dimension. But I don't know, I'm not good enough in category to really to think of that way. Yeah. Yes?
A couple of questions. When you say semi, does that mean just sort of the force root of one, or is it any root? Or you I guess you mean something where if you
change. No, semion means the statistics is angle is a pi over 2. Fermion is a pi.
Would you also accept pi over 3 and pi over
2? Okay, and I think because I assume this kind of fusion, that the two particles together give you a trivial. So only semion is allowed. But when you have other statistics, the fusion is changed. So if you restrict yourself to Z2 fusion and only one non-trivial quasi-particle, then it seems this is only 3 choice. Yeah, and 2 is anomalous, 1 is not anomalous. For pi over 4, that's also fine. But then the fusion will be Z4, only e to the fourth go back to 1. So the fusion is changed. So this is again very interesting example that the fusion algebra restrict what kind of statistics you can have. So the things all bind together. So if you know this, if you know the fusion algebra, how things fuse, the braiding is already limited. There's only a certain kind of braiding is compatible with that kind of fusion. Yeah.
Another question: if you go to 3+ dimensions, here you gave us in 2+1, you gave us something that's not realizable because it's anomalous. Do you know, is there an example?
That's easy, just a 4-dimensional, you go to this 4+1, this Z2 gauge theory and their boundary, will have similar thing.
With point-like,
yeah, the point like, then in that case, the 3-dimensional one would have a 1 and a boson. If one and a single boson in 3D, again, it's bad. Yeah. But actually, you can show that you have to have a string. You can say, in order to detect a particle in 3 plus 1D, no other particle can do the job. You have to have a non-trivial string to detect the particle. So therefore, the 3 plus 1D anomaly-free topological theory with a particle must also have a string. No, no. You have a string, can create a small loop, then wrap around it. Yeah. Yeah, you need a string. So that, yeah. So therefore, the three-dimensional topological theory with only topological particle is anomalous.
So you said you can have your own topological
you can, but you cannot have that as an only topological excision. They exist together with other string-like topological excision.
Then
it's not possible. Anomaly means it's not realizable in the same dimension. You need to go to higher dimension. No, anomalous really means that this particular topological theory as a stable topological theory can only appear as a boundary of a one higher dimensional stable topological theory. No, standard model have a gauge theory. Yeah, so you have this gauge flux, and this gauge flux line are really detection. So let's assume standard model, all this gauge theory became discrete. Then the discrete theory has some have flux lines, and that detect all the particles. Yeah. So for the discrete gauge theory, really the charge and the flux line of gauge field, they do appear together. Not only formally, but really as a necessary condition in order for them to exist as a topological object. Yeah. So those are simple examples can demonstrate this picture. But this is really conjecture.
It's strange because in gravity, in principle, have topological. I mean, topological in the sense of space-time topology. But they would exist.
Yeah, but this is yeah. Yeah, but here we consider them a bosonic model, you know, whether it exists or not as a realized bosonic model or not. Yeah, and space-time has to be fixed. You know, I don't have space-time fluctuation. So there's many other things, yeah. Okay, maybe we should. Yeah, thank you.